This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, bottom of hour number two. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us here in studio via text message. Send your text to 129090. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From TSN 1050 Overdrive in Toronto, we're pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend Jeff O'Neill. O-Dog, how are you this morning?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We're doing great, thank you. Jeff, I got to start with what happened last night in Toronto between the Leafs and the Bruins, and the Bruins obviously add to the Leafs' woes. But forget about the game. What about Brad Marchand post-game taking that trophy he gets for MVP and sort of doing a lap around the ice at the ACC, or I guess at the Scotiabank Center? You know, where does that rank in terms of sort of the ballsiest moves for a player to pull off, you know, on an opponent's rink after a victory?
You know what? When you're Brad Marchand and you basically own the Maple Leafs, and it's just it's an MVP of the game trophy. It's just, who cares? I mean, you can basically do whatever you want, because every time he steps on the ice, he backs it up. And that just adds to his kind of who Brad Marchand is, and whether you like him or dislike him, he's a hell of a player, and he produces points, and he was the game breaker last night. That's the way he decided to celebrate. I remember back in Vancouver, people were pissing him off, and he did the old Stanley Cup ring celebration. So, hey, he backs it up, man. He does a lot of different things that people don't like, but at the end of the day, he's a hell of a player, and he walks the walk, that's for sure.
Yeah. It's good to be a troll if you can back it up like he did last night with his performance in Toronto.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what he does. He can say stuff, he can do stupid stuff, but when the puck drops, he gets the job done, and that's that's all people want from him.
Now, Jeff, we want to ask you about Mitch Marner, who's obviously out of the lineup right now, and we want to talk about Austin Matthews, who's popping in a lot of G's, but I wanted to ask you about Zach Hyman. He obviously missed the start of the season. He's been back for a couple of games, and he's a guy that kind of is often a forgotten forward on the Leafs, but is his return just kind of perfect timing with Marner going out of the lineup and the Leafs struggling right now? Because I think you'd agree he's been a really productive player for this Leafs team for quite some time.
Yeah, you know what? He's just, and the different element he brings, the Leafs are not exactly the most physical team. They might be the least physical team in the NHL. So to get some guys or a guy that comes back, and Mike Babcock describes him as one of the best forecheckers in the game, and that's not far from the truth. He gets in there, and usually when he does, he gets the puck back. So that's something desperately needed. They just don't bring a very heavy element or physical element as far as forechecking. So he's a guy that's welcome back. Unfortunately, both games he's been back, they haven't won. And they're a mess right now. There's no other way to describe it. They're not playing well. They got injuries. Their special teams are awful. Their defensive zone coverage is awful. And they're going down the wrong road right now, because they got, I think, 11 of 13, Bobby McKenzie said last night in the panel, are on the road. And not easy ones either. It's not like, I don't think there is many easy games. There's maybe two or three in the NHL right now. So they got their work cut out for them. I think by December 1st, we're going to figure out what this team's doing, whether it be too early to say buyers or sellers. But they got a tough schedule coming up, and if they don't come out of it on the positive side, they could very easily be donezo. There's, you know, and people have brought up the St. Louis Blues. Like, that was a one-off for me. I don't really see somebody doing that again.
Oh, Jeff, how would you judge Mike Babcock? How has he handled things in Toronto? Obviously, he's got a tremendous amount of experience. So how is he handling this bout of adversity?
Well, you know what? I judge a coach on basically, you know, special teams, defensive zone, because that's where the teaching element comes in. And they're both a mess right now. You talk about motivating players. They always give up the first goal. It's just nonstop. They start the game 1-0, 2-0. So he's failing in those elements right now, because defensive zone play, it's very difficult to score a goal in the NHL. A coach can't teach somebody to do that, because that's just something that's a natural thing, and it comes natural, and you can't really teach it. You can't say to a guy, get into this area, and when you do, rip it underneath the bar, because only some guys can do that. But teaching defense is supposed to be one of those things where you can teach it to the players and they can figure it out. Look what's going on in the island.
Mm-hmm.
They are taught to play a certain way, and positionally sound they are, and that comes with coaching. It's no shock that a team with Ken Hitchcock or Barry Trotz behind the bench are very defensively sound. And that doesn't mean you don't care about offense, but you know what the hell you're doing in your own zone. And time again with the Maple Leafs, there was a Coyle goal last night where, and even the Marchand second goal, it's just like, how do you give up those opportunities in the big leagues? I have no idea, because it's just amateur hour stuff. You can't leave a guy, five guys back in their O zone or their D zone, but you leave the one guy, the most dangerous guy in front of the net open? That's crazy stuff, man.
Jeff O'Neill is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know Jeff, of course, from Overdrive on TSN 1050 in Toronto. So, Jeff, how do you solve those problems? I mean, you know, and they're not new problems. They're not problems that have just, you know, reared their ugly head through the first 21 games of the year. You know that the Leafs don't want to make a coaching change at this point in the season, but how do you solve those problems when it seems like the players refuse to change their behaviors?
That's a great question. It's just, trust me, I've been working at TSN for 7 years now, and they've been a poor defensive team for 7 years. So I just look at it. It's just, I get frustrated looking at it as like a former Leaf player and also an analyst that has to cover the team, and I'm frustrated watching it. But I can't imagine being a coach going in and watching the tape saying, like, I'd be going crazy. Because that's your job, to fix stuff, fix problems, and that's a problem. And now after 7 years, I'm not sure how hasn't been fixed. Like, my brother coaches my nephew, and they're 10 years old, and they fix stuff. They're little kids. It's like, if you can't do this, you fix it. But I don't know. It's awfully frustrating, and it's their job to fix it because it's going down the wrong road right now.
Is it an arrogance within the dressing room?
It must be. To go out there, what's the definition of insanity? Is continuously doing the same thing, expecting a different result? I don't know.
Yeah.
Something like that. Something like that. That's what they do, though. They could go out there and continue to play the same way, and if they're expecting a different result, they're flat-out nuts, because it's the same thing every time. Every time Craig Button or Mike Johnson or Jamie McLennan or myself or David Poulin go on the panel, it's just like, look at this defensive zone coverage. It's as bad as it gets. So I don't know how you don't change that is beyond me.
No, Jeff, just getting away from the Leafs for a second and going east to Quebec and the Montreal Canadiens, they've won three in a row. They've won seven of their last 10. They've only lost two in regulation in their last 10. What do you make of the Canadiens? They're obviously playing some really good hockey right now. Shea Weber looks like a new man at 34 years old. So do you think the Canadiens can maintain this? And what do you see when you're watching that team?
Well, who knows if anybody can maintain it. You're noticing this year a bunch of different swings where teams go up and down. There's so much parity, so you go through your streak of 10 wins or 8 of 10, and you got to have numerous of those if you want to get in the playoffs. You got to keep compiling points. You look at the teams that have racked up the points early on in the season, they basically only have to go almost 500 the rest of the way in. So that's the goal, is to continue on your runs and really minimize your bad runs. For a team like Toronto, if this bad run continues to go really bad, then it's very tough to get in. But as far as Montreal, it looks like Carey Price is back on form. They have a good thing going. They've got some good mojo. Jonathan Drouin seems to have a rebound season. And they got some good young skilled players. So they seem to be feeling good about themselves. And Craig Button has touched upon it many times, is Claude Julien's coaching and adjusting to the personnel he has. And that's just, we're not going to be a defensive, big, physical team, because that's not the personnel they have. So they've adjusted to that, and they look very positive going forward.
You know, Jeff, if you look back to what your old coach in Hartford and Carolina is doing currently with the Winnipeg Jets, are you surprised that he's able to get what he's been able to get, considering the state of the Jets' defense?
I mean, I think so. I was very concerned. I mean, you take those guys off the D-core, like Trouba, Myers, Bufflin, who the hell knows what that situation is going to be. Plus, they've had various injuries mixed in there on top of that. So they're going to keep battling. And I think they had a big win the other night in Florida, didn't they? They won 5-4 in Florida.
4-3, but yeah.
4-3, sorry. So they can find some way to cut those goals against. I'm not sure what's up with, I mean, I know Laine had a good one-timer the other night, but he's been rather quiet all year, hasn't he?
Yeah. Goal scoring-wise, but assists, he's on pace for a career year in terms of his assists.
Yeah. Well, they just got to kind of hold it together, and maybe they can pull the trigger on something for some help on D. and they should be fine. I think Paul kind of understands there's an adjustment period there, and when you lose those decor, you're going to have, like, just think about the offensive zone or the defensive zone for them on the right side, how difficult it was to maintain possession with Trouba, Myers, and Bufflin. It wasn't very fun to go in that left corner in the Winnipeg Jet zone. Mm-hmm. And when you take all of them out of there, people must be thinking, just get it in there and work it around because those guys aren't in there.
Jeff, you mentioned Bufflin, and obviously you won't have the answer to the specifics, but as a player, when you maybe lose trust in the team's medical staff or the training staff, and you have questions about how an injury is being handled, how difficult is that to go through? I don't know if you went through a situation like that specifically, but maybe you've had a teammate previously that went through a situation like that.
I find that very hard to believe in Winnipeg. I know Paul Maurice. I know people that are close to the people in Winnipeg. I know some of the players. I don't think that anybody would purposely mistreat an injury or anything like that in the NHL. I've heard of guys getting a second opinion, but I don't think it's such big business and such serious stuff. And the medical staff and the trainers in the NHL are some of my favorite people. And I have a hard time believing that anybody would do anything malicious or for their own good or for anything against the player's own best interest. So I find that really hard to believe, to be honest with you.
Last question for you, Jeff. Tyson Barrie was one of the Leafs' key acquisitions in the offseason. He's certainly off to a slow start, still looking for his first goal. He's only got 5 assists in 21 games played. Maybe not specific to Barrie's situation, but when you're a player and you're moving from one team and one city that you've been in for the vast majority of your career to a new city and a new team, you know, do we maybe in the public eye underestimate how significant of a change that is and how difficult that is on a player beyond the on-ice portion of that?
Well, I think the one element that's difficult is when you're in a situation like he was in Colorado and they were on the rise and he was a big part of their offense and quarterbacked their power play. And one of the biggest elements of that is they decided that he wasn't going to be part of the answer going forward, and that's disappointing as a player, because whenever somebody decides that we don't want you a part of our group, it's awfully disappointing. So he's got to get over that, and he also has to find a way to help this Toronto Maple Leaf team. He's not quarterbacking the power play, which they might want to think about switching that up to give him the opportunity. But if he's not doing that, he has to find out what else he's going to bring to the table. It's not like you can just say, I know he's an offensive guy, he's not very big, but you can't just be one player who says, I quarterback the power play and that's all I bring to the table. You've got to play 5-on-5, you've got to contribute. You can't be a guy that's a liability out there as a veteran guy and a good player. So he's got to figure all those things out. He's got to do it in a short order of time, because if I'm the Toronto Maple Leafs and I'm paying him and he's not quarterbacking the power play and he's not doing anything else to help the team, maybe he needs to go somewhere else and do that and help a power play, and maybe we can get somebody else that can help us, because he's just, if he's not doing that, he's deemed useless out there.
Jeff O'Neill, you hear him weekdays on TSN 1050 Overdrive. Jeff, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Okay, guys, anytime.
Thanks. Take care, Jeff. Thanks again. When we come back, we continue our evaluation of the Winnipeg Jets at the 20-game mark. We look at the rotating cast of characters that has been on the Jets' defense. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve as part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio. 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Shifley on for Nikolai Ehlers. At the line for Kulikov. Scores! Dmitry Kulikov, who did not register a goal last year, drills it from the line and off the pipe and in.
That was from game number 2 this season. Dmitry Kulikov, rifleman, scoring from the point.
Well, at least if we have a contest, we can use Dmitry Kulikov.
That's true. We can use his goal-scoring prowess right there.
You're always drinking the Kulikov, Drew.
I am. Anytime.
As he's never used that joke before.
It's true. Anytime I
was the first one to use that joke,
I know,
though.
But you've kind of...
I'm the originator.
You ground it into the ground.
Yeah. OG.
Yeah. What'd you say?
He was actually the OJ, original jokester.
OG. I do like OJ. Like the juice, not the
running back, not the alleged murderer.
Yeah.
And that's good to clarify. Thank you. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment of the show brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family owned and operated, has been serving quality home style food since 1985. For a hot, fresh breakfast starting at 6:30 a.m. weekdays and all day long and all weekend long, visit Bernstein's at 1700 Cordon Avenue. That's in the Cordon Village Mall. Let's get talking about the Winnipeg Jets defense at the 20-game mark of this season. You know, we start.
Let's just start with Morrissey right off the bat. Like,
okay, thank you for interrupting me for that.
he's obviously having a great year, and you know, I could easily give him plus one exceeding expectations, but I'm going to give him matching expectations because he's obviously a top 20 defenseman in my mind in the league. So I had the highest expectations for him. And, you know, he's playing, you know, 23, 24, 25, even close to 30 minutes a night, right? And just love that goal. I mentioned that during the first hour that he scored against Florida. That's just a offensive defenseman type of goal, right? So, I mean, Morrissey has been as advertised. You can play him in all situations. He's leading this group of defensemen. And when you talk about, you know, the rotating cast of characters, Drew, I mean, what has been the constant? It's been Josh Morrissey. And obviously, you've got Nathan Beaulieu back in the lineup. And, you know, we can talk about Sammy Niku later. But, you know, we expect Niku to be up with the Jets sooner rather than later. But the constant...
I'm not sure there, Paul Maurice.
Well...
Barring an injury right now,
Dave can talk more about this because he goes to all the Moose games.
But the question is, should he be up with the Jets? I would say the answer is yes. But
what does he have to prove at the AHL level at this point?
To me, nothing.
He's probably the best defenseman in the American Hockey League. At the very least, he's probably one of the top five defensemen. I think you'd agree with that, Dave. And he's proven himself. So let's get him back up here.
I think he should be with the Jets.
Remember, the original justification was conditioning.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's conditioned.
He's more than conditioned.
Yeah.
And he's been very good.
And he's tearing it up.
Yeah, he's on an 8-game point streak. But I mean, again, there's more than just points, and that's something that's important to factor in. But it, you know, there's things that, don't get me wrong, I don't think Sammy Niku playing in the AHL right now is a bad thing if the alternative is him sitting in the press box.
But that can't be the alternative.
Well, but in theory, it could.
My whole point is, if you're calling him up, Sammy Niku should be playing a top four role, not Dmitry Kulikov. And Dmitry Kulikov right now is playing a top four role.
And the truth is, Sammy Niku has played the last 5 games on the left side.
Right.
Now, you know, I've talked about this quite a bit.
He prefers the right side.
He's a left shot defenseman, and he started his career in with the Moose on the left side about 20 games or so.
Mm-hmm.
Then switched to the right and never looked back.
I think when he gets called up for Spezza and takes Spezza's spot, not necessarily Kulikov's spot.
Well, the point is he is more skilled than Dmitry Kulikov or Lucas Spezza or Nathan Beaulieu. So, yeah, sure, he might, you know, when he gets called up, he might be on the third pair. But I don't think we expect him with the current group the Jets have. I'm just talking just plain skill.
Yes.
If you put Sammy Niku in the lineup, he would be the second most skilled defenseman on the Jets.
You improve your defense with Niku in your lineup, which is why so many people are frustrated that he continues to play at the AHL level.
Right, and this has turned into a free Niku segment, which I know the free Niku movement is going to like, but let's get back into the evaluations here, Drew.
Dave?
Let's keep this going, as if I'm the guy that's keeping it on track.
You're the one who interrupted and started talking about Sammy Niku for no reason.
It's true, I started it.
You know what? It's interesting. Josh Morrissey, to me, he's on pace for career numbers in terms of points. He's been, to Ezzie's point, he's been asked to do so much more than ever in his career with the cast of characters the Jets currently have. You know, and look, Jacob Trouba is not having as much success without Josh Morrissey, and Josh Morrissey isn't having as much success without Jacob Trouba. It's not a surprise because they were both very good defensemen, and they created quite a good tandem. So to me, it's not a surprise that their numbers overall have both of them individually have decreased from what they've been traditionally because they formed such a good union. Having said that, I would go with Josh Morrissey's exceeded my expectations based on the fact I have really high ones. I've had them since he was in the AHL, but based on how difficult a task he was going to be asked to handle this year, again,
especially with all the injuries when they're playing Morrissey and 5 randoms.
Right, he's exceeded my expectations.
Neil Pionk, the guy that the Jets acquired as part of the trade for Jacob Trouba.
Yeah, I'll jump right in because I know we're up against the clock here. Plus one. I mean, Neil Pionk, I mean, how much did we know about Pionk? We knew that he had a good offensive year with the Rangers, and he was playing on the top pair. I don't necessarily think anybody expected him to be a top-pairing guy, and he's been a second-pairing guy for the Jets. But to me, it's his composure. He can move the puck. Like, Pionk is a guy that can definitely contribute offensively. I think he had something like 26 points last year for the Rangers. So we know that he was going to contribute offensively for the Jets. But it's not just that. It's the minutes he's playing. I mean, we've seen him play some big-time minutes. minutes for the Jets. And I should mention Morrissey was closer to 20 minutes the last couple of games, but the game against Dallas, he was at 25.
And so, I think that's a sign of the defense getting...
And the power play, right? Because, I mean, when you go out on the power play, obviously those numbers go up. But the point is, Pionk is playing 20-plus minutes a night, and he has been the whole year. So to me, I have no problem with Pionk being in your top four. It's Kulikov, and I hate to always be the guy that picks on Kulikov, but he hasn't had a good year. And so, for me, I would rather see a second pair of Nikku Pionk. And again, I don't want to always bring it back to, you know, getting Sammy Nikku up with the Jets, because I'm not the only one. This is not a vocal minority. This is a vocal majority, Dave. You know, because, you know, you go to all the Moose games and you interact with the fans more than I do. But the point is, Pionk has been a very effective defenseman. So going into the season, I quite frankly, Drew, didn't really know what to expect, because I expected him to be in the top six, but I think he's really excelled in a top four role.
Dave, yeah, as he has him as exceeding his expectations, what do you think?
Look, he was on a pretty bad Rangers team last year. Doesn't look like it's a much better Rangers team this year. And I think you don't, again, it's tough, right? We see these guys twice a year at best with the guys coming over from the East. So it's not like we have a huge breadth of you know, history to look at and say, well, I know this player. So coming into it, all I knew was what the numbers said about Neil Pionk. They weren't that favorable. And, you know, the player himself talked about the lack of confidence he had, especially last year at points. So you didn't have a huge, tremendous level of expectation. But having said that, and I think as he illustrated why, to me at least, Neil Pionk has exceeded my expectations.
Dave and I are just on the same page here. If you look at what we're giving out,
we ride or die.
Yeah, we ride or die. We're giving out the grades. We're almost exactly the same.
Let's do one last player very quickly before we have to head to break. Tucker Poolman, he's got 5 points in 18 games played for the Jets. Your evaluation of Tucker Poolman, match, exceeding, or below expectations so far this season? I'll start with Dave before Ezzy can interrupt.
You know what? Look, Tucker Poolman is continuing to meet my expectations. I have very high expectations for Tucker Poolman. I watched him obviously a lot with the Manitoba Moose, and you know, Pascal Vincent last year said after a game, he looks like a player who's playing in the wrong league. Well, he looks like a player who's playing in the right league now. And you know, he has some health issues, so staying healthy for him can be an issue. But you know, he's played 18 games to this point this year, and I like Tucker's game. I think he's consistent. He's got some offensive ability. I think, you know, one thing we always have to factor in is, especially younger guys coming onto a team, when you go from the minor league to the major league team, it's difficult taking ownership and having that feeling of confidence, knowing that this is your team. There's always that level of uncertainty. Am I a leader on this team, or do I even have a voice on this team? I think Tucker Poolman's starting to find that, and I think it's a good thing for the Jets. So he's definitely meeting my expectations, because they were already very high for him.
Yeah, I'd agree. You got to go with meeting expectations. We know that he was ready to play a top six role. Not only is he playing in the Jets' top six, he's on the top pair with Morrissey, right? He's a guy that can move the puck. I don't think he gets enough credit for that as kind of a bigger player. People maybe look at him and they say, oh, he's a, you know, physical lumbering defenseman. He is a physical guy. He can throw his weight around, but he's also a guy that, you know, can move the puck, and I think he has untapped offensive potential. I don't think he's ever going to be a 40 to 50 point guy in the NHL, but I could see him maybe being a 25 to 30 point guy. So really like his game, and you mentioned, you know, we've been following him since the Moose. I've been following him since the UND days with his brother Colton. So you have as well, Dave. But yeah, we got to go with meeting expectations, because he's been really solid. And Dave mentioned that he had the injury problems last year, didn't play the full season, obviously, with the Moose. And, you know, this year it's nice that he's finally getting that full-time NHL role. Because let's be honest, he's a bit of a late bloomer. He's 25 years old, and this is his full, you know, first full season in the NHL. So he deserves it. And, you know, he's become a very reliable player for Paul Maurice, and pretty consistent as well.
When we come back, we'll finish up the defense. We'll look at the goaltending. We'll look at the special teams, the coaching staff, and the management. Much more to come as we evaluate the Jets through the first 20 games of the season. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.
Cross ice pass intercepted by Ehlers. Back up top for Carlson. San Jose Sharks 3-2, despite the fact they were outshot 53-19. Connor Hellebuck, stellar in nets for the Jets.
One of the seminal victories so far this season, the Jets' victory in San Jose, where Connor Hellebuyck was the first, second, and third star carrying the team on his back. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day, the Jets and the Lightning, 3 o'clock puck drop from Tampa Bay. Complete coverage all day long here on the station.
Can we get a Santa Lucia Pizza in studio right now?
I don't know. If you order one, probably.
I ate breakfast like really early this morning. I woke up at 5 with my kids, and I had a bowl of Shreddies. My daughter likes to eat the Shreddies with me.
Like out of the same bowl or separate?
Yeah, I give
bowl?
Her no. Like I no, she doesn't eat out of the bowl. Like
you
I just
chew it. Well, you chew it in like no, no. Take no, it like a baby bird.
No, I don't do the baby bird. That's moms usually do that with their kids. But I just
sexist
give.
Of you.
No, it's not sexist. I mean, I guess some men do it as well. But
you too no, have just, the ability.
I just
to
I eat my
that.
Shreddies and I give Ariella you know a few Shreddies and she likes them. They're covered in milk and she plays with them a little bit and. Dave, so I haven't eaten since 5 in the morning. It's been 6 hours.
Dave, the non-father in the room, has literally left the studio and says, this is the most depressing segment I've ever heard.
There's been a few of those.
It's depressing about it. I'm talking about having breakfast with my kids.
I know. You and I acknowledge that it's a sweet thing. And Dave, who doesn't have children, does not acknowledge the same thing, unfortunately. And I'm not sure how Sean is. He might be on the fence on the whole conversation.
Dave just wants to get back to the defenseman.
There's no question.
We were on a nice roll talking about Tucker Poolman last segment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can I do the promo, though, that this segment is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia?
Sure.
Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. Thank you for your consideration there, Ezzy. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Let's continue looking at the Jets defense at the 20-game mark. We're evaluating players if they have matched our expectations, if they have exceeded our expectations, or if they are below our expectations. The next defenseman on our list is Dmitry Kulikov. We heard his first goal and only goal of the season, and his only goal in the last 100 and some odd games earlier in the show. He's got 3 points this year. He's played 19 games on the Jets defense. Matching, exceeding, or below your expectations for Dmitry Kulikov?
I almost want to say below expectations, but what I'm going to say is matching expectations just because, you know, for me, Kulikov is a third pairing defenseman, ideally, on an NHL team. And I think because of the turnover the Jets have had and the injuries, Kulikov has kind of been thrust into a top four role. I'd be a lot more comfortable if Dmitry Kulikov was playing that third pairing role. Like I'm talking 10 to 12 minutes as opposed to, you know, 16, 17, 20 minutes. So I got to say matching expectations because for me, I expected him to be a third pairing or maybe even, you know, the Jets' seventh defenseman. So the offensive totals for me, I mean, are kind of irrelevant because I don't expect much offensively from Kulikov. I expect him to play, you know, that defensively responsible game. You know, if he chips in a few goals here and there, I mean, that's just bonus material. So I'll go matching expectations.
Dave Minuk?
Well, I don't have particularly high expectations for Dmitry Kulikov. I think, you know, part of what kills him is that $4.3 million contract.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like an albatross around the neck of the Jets based on what he's able to bring to this team. So, I mean, he's when you do, again, it's interesting, right? Like we were using the met exceeded or below, but of course what factors in is what are your expectations of the player overall, right?
And, so and, if your expectations are pretty low, then you know, it's an advantage to the player to some extent.
It's true. So yeah, I mean, he's being asked to do more than probably what he's capable of doing. I agree with Ezzy, and I think, you know, he's been okay. It's not an ideal role. I think if you put him in that role to Ezzy's point as a third pairing defenseman, I don't have a problem with Dmitry Kulikov. I mean, the problem is when you look at his numbers, if he was making $1.6 million in that third pairing, you'd be like, okay, fine. He's a veteran guy. Maurice likes having veterans. That'd be all right. But like 4.3 based on what he's doing, he's met my very low expectations.
There you go. Anthony Boteto was a free agent signing by the Winnipeg Jets. He's played 14 games on the back end. He has 1 point in those 14 games. Matching, exceeding, below your expectations. Again, this is a player you probably did not have many, if any, expectations for at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, I didn't really expect Boteto to have played 14 of 20 games. And obviously, you know, he's been a healthy scratch recently, right? So I'm going to say he's matched my expectations. You know, this is a guy who has been a depth defenseman at the NHL level for the Nashville Predators, right? So again, I think if Sammy Niku is in the lineup in the top six. I probably, you know, expect Boteto to be, you know, your seventh defenseman permanently for the NHL. The Jets will actually probably have a decision to make. You know, Lucas Abiza was brought in, so the Jets are going to have, you know, a surplus of defensemen. So, you know, I got to go matching.
Dave?
Yeah, I mean, again, here's a guy. It was funny because we had Sean Tierney on last week, and he talked about how Boteto was one of the top Jets guys in terms of some of the numbers. And again, he's been
sample size.
Yeah, no, and he's been fine. He is what he is. Again, do I think he should be on playing ahead of Sami Niku? No, I don't. But like again, I don't make those decisions ultimately. Has he been fine for what you expected from a guy who's an NHL veteran? Yeah, he's been fine.
Last Jets defenseman that's played double digits in games is Carl Dahlstrom. Came over off waivers at the beginning of the year. Nobody really had many expectations or knew much about the defenseman. He played 10 games, still looking to register a point in those 10 games. Your thoughts on Carl Dahlstrom's brief time right now as a member of the Jets?
I'm going to give Carl Dahlstrom a plus one, actually, because you know this is a guy that I think he played something like 40 games last year for the Hawks. You know, sometimes he was playing 20-plus minutes a night because we know the Hawks didn't exactly have the deepest group of defensemen. But, you know, this is a guy who has played 15, 16, 17 minutes a night for the Jets. And, yeah, he's not going to provide you with a lot offensively. At the end of the day, he was placed on waivers. So this isn't a guy that you brought in and you expected him to light it up and play a top four role. So he's actually been pretty impressive to me when he's played on the Jets' third pair. So I'll say plus one because I didn't really know a lot about him, to be honest with you.
Dave?
Yeah, I'm fine with I'm going to go with met my expectations because to Ezzie's point, when you're getting a guy in off waivers, you're not thinking this guy's going to be a giant killer because a team doesn't get rid of a giant killer generally for a reason unless obviously they just don't do it.
Yeah.
So the reality is that you're getting a player who could maybe step up and provide some, you know, buoyancy to your lineup while you're trying to tread water and wait for other guys to come back. But, I mean, like, I didn't have particularly high expectations for Carl Dahlstrom, obviously. So, I mean, he's been able to do what the Jets needed him to do in the games they used him. So he's been fine. He's met my expectations.
Moving to the goaltenders, we start, of course, with the Jets' number one goaltender. He's been exceptional all season long, and I think I know where your answers are going to be on this one. Connor Hellebuck, the Jets.
Yeah, can we give him a plus two? I mean, I said this last week. I mean, I think if the season ended yesterday, he wins the Vezina. That's my own personal opinion. There have been other goalies that have been really good as well. But, I mean, for me, he has just been easily the Jets' most valuable player. Well, and you go back to that first game against the Rangers when he let in, you know, four or five goals. And you remember that wraparound, Mark Stahl wraparound. And everybody was saying, like, oh, boy. I mean, is Hellebuck, you know, going to have a similar season to last year? And is he going to struggle? But you look at his numbers. We talked about it. You know, Dave mentioned Sean Tierney. Goals saved above expectation, which I think is probably, you know, the best stat to show you how good a goalie really is. He's first in the league. So right there, I got to give him a plus one. He has been fantastic.
David?
Well, I mean, as you hit it on the head, I mean, he's the MVP of this team. He's been the difference maker for the Jets almost every single game. You know, 928 save percentage. He's just been very good. As he quoted the GSAA, it's 9.80. So, I mean, and that's for those who don't know, it's the goalie prevented given his save percentage and shots faced versus the league average save percentage on the same number of shots. And so
it means he's making some great saves that other goalies aren't making.
Well, he's, you know, again, you know, it's the goals he's prevented. So, I mean, that's plus nine. That's a pretty impressive number right there. To me, he's been, to Ezzie's point, plus one, plus two, whatever you want to give him. He's been phenomenal.
And his backup goaltender, Lauren Brossoit, how would you evaluate his performance in the Jets' goal so far? Obviously, he hasn't had a ton of playing time, you know, given the schedule so far. He had a good game on Thursday night against the Panthers, but he's only started five games for the Jets so far this year.
No, it has to be minus one, guys. I mean, you're right. I mean, prior to the game against the Panthers, he hadn't played in a week and a half, and, you know, he wasn't great against the Golden Knights, but you go back, you know, roughly a month, you know, he got absolutely lit up by the Pittsburgh Penguins. What did he let in? Seven goals. So, I mean, Brossoit was, you know, just a revelation last year as a backup goaltender. He picked up a lot of wins, and, you know, this year he just hasn't played at the same level. So do I think he can get back to that level? Absolutely. I think, you know, he can be a really good NHL backup. But, you know, in the, you know, five or six starts that he's gotten this year, Dave, like he hasn't been great.
Well, and a lot of times we look at goaltenders and, you know, you think to yourself, are they as good as they are, or is it partly the team around them? Now, Connor Hellebuyck is as good as we think he is, if not better, based on the team around him right now. Lauren Brossoit perhaps is getting a little bit exposed based on the fact that maybe the defense is not maybe the defense isn't as good as it was last year. So yeah, to Ezzie's point, he's not meeting your expectations because they're pretty high, and you know his save percentage is .871 right now, and that's not good. And he had a good start against Florida. I thought he was very good in net the last game. So if you can see more of that, but to this point, and again, that's one thing we talked about is making sure that they're not burning out Connor Hellebuyck this season and overworking him. But we'll see if Lauren Brossoit can keep this up, then he'll be back into that expectation role. But right now he's definitely below.
Looking at the special teams, the Jets' power play is 21st in the league. The Jets' penalty kill is, of course, 30th in the league, matching, exceeding, no, below expectations.
It's minus one, guys. I mean, the penalty kill has been an issue for years under Paul Maurice. And, yes, there has been a lot of turnover on the Jets' blue line, but it's not just the Jets' blue line here. I mean, killing penalties is a team task, right? And when you're second last in the entire league – and the power play hasn't been good. And to me, that's what has been the biggest surprise. And when you're talking about expectations, we expected the Jets, based on the last couple of years, to have a top 10 power play at the least. Maybe even top 5 with all the weaponry that, you know, Paul Maurice can choose from with Laine and Scheifele and Wheeler, Connor, Ehlers. I mean, Roslovic. I mean, it goes on and on and on. They've struggled, I think, a little bit to replace, you know, Buff and Trouba. When you're talking about the point man, mm-hmm. right? You've seen Morrissey and Pionk kind of flip-flop on the top power play units. I like Morrissey better on the top power play unit, but I realize, you know, you've got the left shot versus right shot issue, right? But no, special teams have to be better. And based on 20 games, I don't know how anybody could say that the Jets special teams have met their expectations. Nobody's going to say they've exceeded expectations, but you got to go minus one here. I mean, the special teams have to be better. I think that could really be, you know, a turning point, or I guess that could be the determining factor rather in whether or not they get into the playoffs, because Hellebuck's been great, but I don't think anybody's expecting him to maintain a .940 save percentage. I realize he's at .928, but you know, over the last, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, it's been closer to .940, right? So, mm-hmm.
He needs some help from other sources, right. And the special teams would be one of those sources.
Well, and look, the power play percentage last year was 24.8. The year before that was 23.4, and this year is 16.7. I mean, that's a fall off, right? And you're looking at the PK. PK, too, this is the worst year for the PK. Mm-hmm. You know, the best year was 2 years ago, 81.8%. Last year was 79.2%, and this year they're at 70.
And that's not great.
No, and then this year they're at 72.1%. Okay. So, I mean, like, it's clear the special teams is not even close to being at par as what this team, especially based on the personnel, mm-hmm. especially power play.
Last one, Paul Maurice, Kevin Cheveldayoff. Matching, exceeding, below expectations. You probably can do Maurice easier than Cheveldayoff.
Well, yeah,
point.
It's really tough to give a grade to a GM based on 20 games.
Do Maurice.
Yeah, for me, Paul Maurice has met my expectations. I think you could even give him a plus one here. I mean, the special teams, I think, maybe is the only reason I don't. But with all of the adversity this team has faced in 20 games, the fact that the Jets are in a playoff spot above .500, and, you know, they didn't have the easiest schedule in October when you talk about all the games, Dave, and the lack of practice time. Mm-hmm. So I got to go, you know, meeting expectations. Like I said, you know, the first hour, I thought the Jets would be a playoff team this year. And I think there was every reason to believe that they were going to fall off, you know, with Brian Little out of the lineup. And you didn't have Nathan Beaulieu in the lineup. So, you know, I'm going to give Paul Maurice a meeting expectations. I think he's done a pretty good job considering there have been a lot of things swirling around this team, you know, controversy, injuries, everything like that.
It's a tough one. This is a real tough year because, you know, to Jeff O'Neill's point, what he said is you can't teach offense, but you can teach defense. Mm-hmm. And this team defensively hasn't been great. You know, they've relied on their goaltender. If it wasn't for Connor Hellebuyck, this team, you know, can only imagine what this team would be at. The one thing about Paul Maurice that I think is handcuffing him right now is his inability to, you know, again, he's stuck on this veteran idea. Like, he doesn't allow for bring Sammy Niku up, play him some games. If you don't like him, then don't like him. But he can't not be better than what you've got in your top six right now. And so, to me, like, not making decisions like that is curious. Like, again, you made the decision to send Sammy Niku down, and I didn't disagree with it. I thought it was a good decision because I thought, you know,
they only played one game in the span of about a month with all the injuries and
absolutely.
Everything else.
So I had no problem with his decision to send Sammy Niku down, and people talk about the AHL like it's a negative. Look, if you make a mistake at the AHL, you know what Pascal Vincent does with you? He puts you out the next shift. He doesn't bench you. The difference in the expectations and what a player can do at that AHL level is so vastly different and so important for their development. So people will slag the AHL and it's a bad league. First of all, it's an excellent league, second best league in the world. And secondly, it's an opportunity for a guy like Nico to develop. So I have no problems with them allowing him to, quote, marinate in the AHL. But at this point, you got to, especially, you know, I mean, this is a guy.
The roast is done and he's being overcooked.
I mean, at the end of the day, like.
Now I'm really getting hungry.
But he's a guy who's going to improve your possession numbers, improve the breakouts, which is, you know, something we talk about with this team that they could use help with because they don't really have that type of player. Josh Morrissey, but I really think Nico could add an element that this team is missing. So to me, Paul Maurice is below my expectations. You know, it's hard to say that because, again, the team's had so much changeover. But
after
I'm going to go below because, like I said, sure, the team's treading water right now, but the power play hasn't been good. The penalty kill isn't good. The defense has been marginal. Like, if you don't have Connor Hellebuck, where is this team? That would be my thought process. And that the coach doesn't get credit for the play of the goaltender.
After it's all said and done, after we've done all of our evaluations of all the players who've at least played 10 games, Dave Minuk has the Winnipeg Jets coming in at a zero, and Ezra Ginsberg has the Jets coming in at a one. So there you have it. After 20 games, there's your evaluations in terms of below, meeting, or exceeding expectations of the Winnipeg Jets. We'll do this exercise, of course, at the 40-game mark, at the 60-game mark, and then at the end of the season as we see how this team develops. When we come back, the Hockey Hall of Fame induction ceremony is coming up. We have an interesting Hockey Hall of Fame debate coming for you next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve as part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets. TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
This one's really complicated. I don't know what the path out is for anybody here. So the Kings, I understand what the Kings are doing. The Kings are like, you know what? We got a bunch of older guys on deals we don't like. But Kovalchuk's is the one deal they can't run from. If they can trade it, great. But nobody's trading for Kovalchuk right now.
The Bob Father, TSN Hockey Insider, Bob McKenzie, talking about the seeming end to Ilya Kovalchuk's career in the LA Kings organization, whether or not that's the end of his career at the NHL level, time will tell, but things certainly not going well with Kovalchuk and his return to the NHL. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors is final night in town. Eric Griffin is headlining the club. Very few tickets available. All of his previous shows have sold out. You know him, of course, from Workaholics. Don't miss Eric Griffin. Tickets at rumorscomedyclub.com. And this time next week, Tom Green will be at Rumors. Tickets for Tom Green also going very quickly and available at rumorscomedyclub.com.
Little known fact, Eric is Peter's brother.
Like Peter Griffin from Family Guy? Very good, Dave. Are you performing your Rumors tonight?
No relation to Seth Griffith. Sorry, Griffith.
Yeah, because they spell and pronounce their last names differently. But good effort there also there, Ezzy. Anybody else? Anybody else? No, we're good? Okay, good. Thank you.
Let's get into Marlowe here.
Okay.
So and Kovalchuk.
Ezzy sent me an email and he said, the Hockey Hall of Fame inductions are coming up on Monday. And he wants a Hall of Fame debate between two guys that one guy I think that would probably maybe come to the mind as a potential Hall of Famer. And then another guy who, in my mind, when you sent me the email, I thought you may have been, chewing some of the funny gummies or smoking some of the funny stuff when you brought his name up on board.
I might have been.
Ilya Kovalchuk, you think, has a Hall of Fame case.
Yeah, I can easily make a case for both of these guys. Let's start with Patty Marlowe, one of my favorite players of all time, a good Saskatchewan boy. I'm going to make the case that not only should he be in the Hall of Fame, I don't even think this should be a debate that he's going to go in the Hall of Fame. First off, let's start off with what he's done recently. He hit the 800 consecutive games. The guy has not missed a game since 2009, and it didn't matter that he wasn't signed at the beginning of the season because he wasn't on another team. So according to the NHL, he is at, I think, 802 right now.
The last time he missed a game was 2008-09 when he played with the Sharks. He missed six games that year.
Right. I mean, the guy has just been a poster child consistency. Iron Man, right? Let's get into the point totals here, first of all. So first of all, he's played the fifth most games ever. 1,673 games ever. I want to stress that. Fifth most all time. Okay. 555 career goals. This is all based on hockeyreference.com. You could get this on a variety of places.
I checked Hockey DB. Hockey has the same numbers
DB,
as well.
But Hockey Reference goes a little bit more in depth. 28th all time. Okay. So you look at the 27 guys in front of him. They're all Hall of Famers. Okay. This, to me, is probably the most telling statistic why the guy should be in the Hall of Fame. Okay, the games played, the goals, that's one thing. 106 career game-winning goals, 8th all-time. The guys ahead of him, Yager, Gordie Howe, Phil Esposito, Timu, Ovechkin, Shanahan, Brett Hull, are all those guys Hall of Famers?
Yes.
108 career game-winning goals. Yes, I'm going to repeat that. That is astonishing to me. And once I get into Kovalchuk here, yeah. I want to stress this is not the NHL Hall of Fame. It's the Hockey Hall of Fame. It's not just based on what you do in the NHL, okay? So let me go off here for a second. Patrick Marleau has scored 30 goals 7 times. He's scored 20-plus goals 15 times. And he also had two 19-goal seasons, okay? No Stanley Cup for Patty Marleau. I already hear people saying that. He has two Olympic gold medals with Canada, 2010, 2014. He's got a world championship gold. He's won a World Cup of Hockey back in 2004. Patrick Marleau's a Hall of Famer.
You make a good case for Patrick Marleau, and when you sent me that email, as I referenced, I could say, okay, Marleau, I'm going to listen to your argument. I think you might have something there. I know he's got the longevity going for him. He's not a point-of-game player, which is always a benchmark I like to look for. But everything else you said there, he's a gamer. He's certainly you can make the argument for him. When you brought up Kovalchuk's name, as I mentioned, I thought you were absolutely out to lunch.
Okay,
so I'll let you make the Kovalchuk argument, and then I'll tell you why you're wrong.
Okay, I'll make the argument based on I think he's one of the best goal scorers in the history of hockey. He has 436 career NHL goals. He played 5 years in Russia, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Kovalchuk's career goals per game average is 27th all-time at .486. Basically, he scores every second game, okay? In those 5 years with SKA St. Petersburg, okay, if I can speak, which I sometimes have trouble doing.
It's hard when you have wine gums in your mouth.
His goals per game average was the same. It was right around .5. If Kovalchuk had played those 5 years in the NHL at .5 per game average, he'd have 606 career goals, which places him 20th all time.
Yeah, the 600 goal mark usually means you're in the
exactly.
Hockey Hall
of
Fame.
That's my argument.
Yeah.
Not only would that play, by the way, Yari Curry is 20th all time. He had 601 career goals, so he would pass Yari Curry, also a Hall of Famer. This is why, to me, he should be in the Hall of Fame. Again, not the NHL Hall of Fame, the Hockey Hall of Fame. At the international level, U18 World Championship, silver and gold. 2008, 2009, he won gold. 2018, not only was the Olympic gold medal winner, but he was the tournament MVP, and a lot of people didn't think he should get the MVP. By the way, he was an MVP of the World Hockey Championship as well. 9-time 30-goal scorer. He scored 40 goals or more 5 consecutive years, obviously with the Atlanta Thrashers. This is a guy that at his peak, and you remember, he was scoring those goals. Back in the kind of early 2000s, guys weren't scoring. A lot of guys weren't scoring 40-plus goals. So to me, he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame for not only what he's done in the NHL, for what he's done in the Russian League and at the international level. Yes, he doesn't have a Stanley Cup, but he's won gold at every level. I talked about it. Olympics, World Hockey Championship, World Under-18s. The guy is one of the most prolific goal scorers of all time. So that for me is why he should be in the Hockey Hall of Fame.
Here's my counter-argument. You include his years in the KHL as part of his stats, and they are his stats, and he doesn't get penalized for them. But I'm not sure that if he had been playing at the NHL level during those years, during those 5 years when he was overseas in Russia, if he would have been able to keep scoring at the .5 a half a goal a game scoring pace that he had earlier in his career. It seemed to me that he was beginning to drop off from that pace, and I don't think he would have been as prolific in the NHL during 13, 14 through 17, 18.
He had 37 goals in his last year before he went to Russia. And in Russia, he averaged .5 goals per game, and it's a different league.
Yeah,
but the point is, his last year with the Devils, it's not like he had 19 goals. He had 37 goals.
No, if you want to look at it more accurately, in 12-13.
Full season, I'm talking about.
Well, he played 37 games for the Devils in 12-13, and he only had 11 goals.
So, Drew, you're going to pick 1 year?
I don't think he was going to be a 35-goal scorer. So
even if he was a 30-goal scorer.
I don't think he was going to be a 30-goal scorer, to be honest. I think that his numbers were beginning to drop, and as a result, his...
But you're basing that on 1 year.
Yeah, I'm basing that on 1 year. I mean, you got to use... I have to use something to base my opinion on.
Right, and I based it on 5 years in the Russian League.
And
versus
I don't,
one half year in the NHL.
I don't think he would score at the 25, 30 goal pace at the NHL level.
Even if he scores at the 20 to 25 goal level, which I think is fair, he would still be well over 500 goals. He'd be at 550 goals.
Then he would have been
be a Hall of Famer at 550?
Not a chance.
At 550 goals?
No, nothing. No.
Okay.
The Hall of Fame, and I've made this argument on the show for 11 years now.
That's not the Hall of very good.
Is not the Hall of very good.
So you're not the first person to make that argument.
I know, and he would be a very good player, but he would not be a Hall of Famer.
550 goals doesn't get you in.
Not in my books. I'm sorry.
Because most guys that have more than 550 are in.
That's fine, but it shouldn't. In my books, it makes you the Hall of Very Good and not the Hall of Fame. And so we differ on that.
So if he's top... He scored more goals than 99% of players that have played in the league, and you don't think that gets you in the Hall of Fame?
Not in my Hall of Fame.
Okay.
Maybe in yours, but that's fine, and we have different Hall of Fames, and that's totally
actually, neither
fair.
Neither one of you has a Hall of Fame.
You would be top 25 goal scorers of all time. Doesn't get him in, though. Only 24 more players that have ever played in the NHL have scored more goals than
him. I understand your point. Okay. To me, he's not a Hall of Famer in my mind, and okay. I respect your opinion.
Yep.
But in my mind, he just doesn't qualify for it.
I don't think he's a shoe-in at all. I told you off-air, I think Marlowe should be a shoe-in. I've made that argument.
Yes, I think Marlowe will
Kovalchuk
make it in.
Kovalchuk is a guy that might have to wait. Or he might never get in. I don't know. I think McGillney should get in, but it's the same kind of argument that McGillney didn't do it for as many years as other players.
Yeah,
right?
But McGillney at his peak was exceptional. And
Kovalchuk wasn't exceptional?
He was.
540-plus goal seasons?
He was a very good player. He was a very good player. Don't get me wrong, but... You know, to me, he's not a Hall of Famer in my book.
Okay.
And that's, you know, Sera. I'm sure he's going to go on with his, you know, $6.25 million per season and still be okay with him knowing that I don't think he's a Hall of Famer.
No, by the way, I think if you ask 10 people, I think you'd probably get, you know, 5 or 6 that probably say he's not a Hall of Famer.
No question.
I'm in the vocal minority probably here, but I just think at his peak, again, I agree with you. He started to decline a little bit mm-hmm. when he went over to the Russian League, but I just think the numbers and his accomplishments. There is an argument there for him being in the Hall of Fame. That's all I'm saying.
Absolutely. I think it was
a fair debate, though.
It was a good segment and it was a good debate, Mr. Ginsburg. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about what Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl did the other night. We're going to bring Willie Donick, Nashville Predators broadcaster, into the program as well. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve as part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, another look at the TSN Radio scoreboard. In case you missed what the Oilers, Draisaitl and McDavid did earlier this week, how about 11 points between the two of them in their absolute demolishment of the Colorado Avalanche? They're in action this afternoon against the Dallas Stars, a Stars team that is, you know, obviously a little bit of noise around that team, given what Jim Montgomery said after the game here in Winnipeg last Sunday. Draisaitl and McDavid are cheat mode, and I know it's cliche to say that, but how about the fact that Draisaitl's leading the NHL in points, but I think he's 5 points up on McDavid right now, and nobody's talking about it.
Now, who do you give the Hart Trophy to?
Right
like,
now,
you, like you split it in half.
They were incredible. What they did against Colorado on was that Wednesday night or Thursday night? I can't remember which night it was, but that was just unheard of to see two guys go off for 11 points in the first two periods of the game. And, you know, obviously you don't need me to tell you that Draisaitl and McDavid are worth every penny, but right now they're playing almost at the peak of their powers and they are worth every penny.
And yet Connor Hellebuck shut them out.
and can't predict puck, as they like to say.
And meanwhile, Adam Werner was thinking to himself, what happened after my debut?
Exactly. I did so well in Winnipeg. What happened when I went to Edmonton? When we come back, Willie Donick is going to join us. We'll talk about the Nashville Predators and their start to the season. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. After this afternoon's game in Tampa, the Jets head to Nashville to meet the Predators for the first time this season. We head out to Nashville to talk to Willie Donick.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Willie Donick is a good friend of this program. He's also the Nashville Predators play-by-play broadcaster. Willie, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, great to be back with you guys.
Our pleasure as always, Willie. The Preds off to a 9-6-3 start so far this season. You know, good for 21 points in 18 games played. You know, I look at this Predators team, and their numbers, I think, are probably better than their record maybe indicates. You know, they got the +9 goal differential and things of that nature. Were people too quick to maybe write off the Predators after how last season ended and not place them sort of in one of those upper echelon Western Conference teams?
You know, I think in their own mind, they felt like they could still be at that level. They feel like the window is still open. I think just because of the emergence of some of the other teams, it probably put the Predators down a peg in the perception. But I think they've shown so far. And the other thing is last year, and I think Winnipeg fans could relate, is any time they lost two or three games in a row or they didn't win three or four in a row, like they had the previous year where everything went well, everybody was trying to figure out what was going on and what's wrong. And so it was kind of perceived as a bad year, even though they had 100 points and they won the Central Division.
Willie, I got to ask you about Nick Bonino. He's always been a player that I've liked, and he was obviously a big part of those teams that won the Stanley Cup in Pittsburgh, and he's probably a player that doesn't get enough credit for how good of a player he is, but you know, he's on pace for over 30 goals right now. He's second on the team. He's got 8 goals. Just how important is he for this team? Because I think you'd agree, Nashville is not a team that that depends on just one or two players for goals.
Yeah, their strength is, I think, especially when you subtract Subban and add Duchesne, they feel like they've got the deepest group of forwards that they've ever had on paper, and Bonino has been great. I don't think he's going to score 30 goals, but I think he's a good bet for, you know, what he usually puts out there, 17, 18, 19, somewhere in there. He plays the role that Mike Fisher played for so long, that key number three center that can go up against top players. He's got 8 goals, and he's also done it basically starting in the defensive zone a huge percentage of the time. I think his offensive zone starts are in the 30% range. So right now he's got the most consistent line on the team in terms of just good offensive possession, good production, Rocco Grimaldi and Craig Smith. Not a classic checking line, but it's been a really effective line for them.
Willie, last week we had Dallas Stars GM Jim Nill on the show, and we talked about the Bridgestone NHL Winter Classic, which is taking place against the Nashville Predators, and he talked about the excitement for the fans and how the Cotton Bowl is filling up. From a Nashville perspective, I know we're still about 6 weeks away from the game, but is there a lot of excitement about the organization being part of this game?
Tons of excitement. Tons of excitement. I think as soon as they were named to that game, people started figuring out how they were going to get down to Dallas. I think if you think in terms of what goes on in our area, in the southeast part of the United States, the tradition a lot in college football, there's a lot of college football fans that have converted into Predator fans. And they're used to, at the holiday time, going to their favorite team's bowl game, whether it be the Orange Bowl down in Miami or the Citrus Bowl in Orlando, or going out west to somewhere like Tempe, Arizona. So this falls right in line to what a lot of people have done at some point in their lives, and they're really excited to do it for a hockey game. So the Cotton Bowl is one of those bowls, so this is going to be great. I think Nashville is going to be very well represented at this thing.
Well, Lord knows Vandy isn't going to a bowl game this year.
Watch out now. I'm a Vanderbilt grad. Watch out where you're going there. No, you're right. We're not. That's not our strong suit, football.
No, and I'm a UK fan, so it'll be quite the epic matchup this afternoon in Nashville.
You
UK.
Can boo Drew if you want, Willie,
hey,
for being a UK fan.
Available if you want to come down.
That's right, exactly. Good seats still available. Bring about 10,000 of your friends, and they'll be able to accommodate them. Willie Donick, Nashville Predators play-by-play broadcaster, is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know, Willie, back on July 1st when free agency opened, it was sort of a foregone conclusion to some extent that Matt Duchesne was going to end up in Nashville, and of course he did, and he's been off to a great start this year. 15 points in 17 games played. Earlier in this show, we had, you know, Jeff O'Neill on, and we were talking about, you know, a guy like Tyson Barrie, who's having trouble adjusting to things in his new city of Toronto. And then you look at Duchesne, and he's fit in seamlessly with the Predators. Why is it such a good match, and why has it been worked out so well, so quickly for Duchesne in Nashville?
Well, I think they had the right pieces to put with him. I think the biggest challenge for him, honestly, and really for the team, is they haven't really settled in on exactly who should be playing with who. They have a lot of options, which is a good thing. But he got off to a really fast start. He built very good chemistry with Philip Forsberg, and then Forsberg got hurt, and that's when his production started dropping off a little bit. He's rebounded here in the last few games. In particular, the biggest thing that he's helped with is the power play. The power play was the biggest weakness on the team last year. It's a well-told story. They finished at 12.9%, and they had to fix it. But his left shot on the power play, the way he plays that net front and then side of the net, he does all the things well, and it is really opened a lot up. So the power play has been an A+. 5-on-5 has been a little bit hit or miss, depending on who he's been playing with, and they're still working on that part. But he loves the city. He really enjoys the community. And you're right; you could kind of see that there was a mutual admiration for a couple of years there, and there was finally an opportunity to go sign him.
Willie, Dante Fabbro, this is his first full NHL season. He's playing on that second pair with Matthias Ekholm, essentially replacing PK Subban. How would you assess his first 17 or 18 games so far this year?
I think it's met expectations and maybe even exceeded expectations based on what's realistic for somebody that was playing college hockey at this time last year. Those are big, big shoes to fill playing in P.K. Subban's role. Now, they're using him a little bit differently. They don't use him on the penalty kill yet. I think as his career unfolds, he absolutely will be in that role. They're using the veteran Dan Hamhuis in that spot, and Hamhuis has played very well in that role. But his hockey IQ, his hockey sense is excellent. And what I think he's done very well is he's handled the stress when there have been mistakes made. He'll have an occasional mistake, which is inevitable for a defenseman his age. Usually doesn't make the same mistake twice. His poise is excellent. And so I think he's really going to shine long-term. The key is, I mean, this was the whole key to the offseason moves. Adding Duchesne, subtracting Subban, the key is how well Fabbro can fit into that role. We're just getting started. There's a long way to go, but I think he's done a very, very good job so far.
Well, Willie, speaking of long-term moves in season, they locked up their captain for an 8-year extension. How has Roman Josi handled the signing of the contract? How has he been since it happened? And to my mind, he's one of the best defensemen in the NHL. He's such an exciting player to watch. But how, you know, these contracts can sometimes get into a player's mind. So how's he been since the contract was signed?
I think he's been really good. It was not either side's plan to have it dip into the season. If you take a look, they've been pretty good at locking guys up in the summer. Ryan Johansson, Ryan Ellis come to mind the previous couple of years. So it took a little longer than normal. I think he is a very special player. I think his respect around the league has even gone up a notch. Now that Shea Weber and PK Subban are no longer on the team, he's kind of got that top billing as a defenseman that he's never really had before. And I think a lot of people are now rooting for him maybe to really get seriously into that Norris Trophy discussion, because I think people that watch him every night know that he's deserving of that consideration. And so we're just waiting for him to have that one year where it all falls into place.
The Winnipeg Jets will be in Nashville on Tuesday night to face the Predators. Willie Donick will have the play-by-play broadcast of that contest. Willie, appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
All right, anytime, guys. Appreciate it.
Take care, Willie. Thanks again. Again, Tuesday night for the Jets and the Predators. Tonight, this afternoon, coming up 3 o'clock, the Jets and the Lightning. Let's wrap up the program.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Ezra Ginsberg, cheer or jeer?
Yeah, I don't know if you guys saw this. I'm going to give a cheer to Rhett Kingston. He plays for Western Michigan, obviously coached by Andy Murray, Manitoba's Wade Allison also on the team. Rhett was born with 3 fingers, and he scored a hat trick. This was, I believe, about a week ago against Ferris State. And when he scored the hat trick, you should check this out online if you haven't seen it. He takes off his gloves and he shows his 3 fingers. Hey. He's obviously had to go through a lot of adversity in his life. So to me, that was, you know, I got goosebumps when I saw that. So to me, you know, Rhett Kingston, good for him. The only 3 goals he scored this year, obviously we're hoping he scores more, but to me, that was just such a nice thing to see in hockey, a guy that has, you know, gone through so much and scored a hat trick. And that was just a special moment for him and his family.
Yeah, nice to see somebody overcoming adversity like that. Good cheer there, Ezzy. Dave, cheer or jeer?
I'm going to cheer the play of Mikael Burden. The guy's been next world for the Manitoba Moose. So he's played, they've gone and, you know, 180 saves on 183 shots. The guy's been phenomenal. Back-to-back shutouts. I thought maybe earlier in the season the pressure of being the number one guy with Eric Comrie claimed on waivers by the Coyotes was kind of getting to him. His rebound control wasn't what we had seen last year, but he's really locked it down, and he's been a much better player. Like Tazzy's point earlier, almost scored a goal. Very exciting player to watch. Fans come out to watch him play. So Mikael Burden definitely deserves a cheer for his efforts last week.
The Moose in action tomorrow afternoon against the San Antonio Rampage. Dave Minuk will be on the call with the broadcast of tomorrow's Moose Admirals game. I'm going to wrap up Cheers and Jeers by cheering, of course, all the Hockey Hall of Fame inductees, but paying particular attention to Haley Wickenheiser. I mean, she's such a wonderful inspiration for boys and girls. World-class, world-best women's hockey player of all time, and now she's becoming a doctor in case she's not quite impressive enough. That's it for this Saturday morning in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290. A big thank you to all of our guests for joining us on the program. In case you missed any of it, it's available for download on tsn1290.ca, on illegalcurve.com. It's wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, review us, subscribe to us, let us know what you think of the show. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. For producer Sean Assor doing a great job behind the board, for Dave Minuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show as part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.